Hello, and thank you for joining us for the RealCom webinar. I'm Sarah Bemprat with RealCom, and today we will be talking about part one of the Best Practice Showcase series. And this series will be covering smart buildings. Today we will be covering smart offices and corporate campuses. I'm very excited to be joined by a great panel. And before we get started, I just want to go over a few housekeeping items. You can use the Q&A section to submit your questions and comments for the moderator and the panelists. And if we don't get back to you during the session, we'll do our best to follow up with you after the event. You can also download a copy of the presentation handout from the handout section. And for the best webinar experience, we recommend that you log out of any other internet applications that are currently running. If you run into any technical issues, you can email me at sbemprad@realcom.com. And we are recording the session, so if you need to step away and are afraid of missing part of this webinar, it will be recorded and we will be sending out a copy of the recording after the session. I want to introduce you to the sponsors for today's event, Buildings IoT, Facilio, and IBIS, and we will learn more about these companies throughout the session. And with that, I'd like to introduce you to the moderator, which is Donnie Walker. Donnie leads Newcomb and Boyd's Intelligent Building Systems Group. He has over 20 years of engineering, project management, and partner in charge responsibilities in communications, security, and integrated building automation systems. Donnie, thank you so much for joining us, and I will turn it over to you.
Thanks, Sarah. So I'm Donnie Walker. Work with Newcomb and Boyd, and we are a consulting engineering firm that specializes in smart buildings and smart campuses and really the design and consulting around the technology that's needed in this environment. And today we're going to be talking with a great panel here and really looking at some of the best practices in operational technology for commercial real estate, including the cybersecurity practices, converged operational technology networks, and really how we're all leveraging data to improve the business operations. We'll also get into some of the use cases that are driving the business and the need for data, as well as some of the organizational changes for really best practices in operations. And so we're gonna get started with Byron Lopez. And let me give a quick introduction for him. He's the operational technology manager for Kilroy Realty. And Byron is responsible for managing and innovating Kilroy Realty's smart building systems and helps determine policies and processes from security to maintenance and growth to increase the building efficiency and tenant experience. Byron, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you, Donnie. I appreciate the invitation and the time to be able to talk about this. So at Kilroy, we have a policy. Let me go back this thing. So ideally, people really thought that a smart building was just your HVAC system, right? You were able to control heating and cooling from your phone or from your computer. And that was really the substance of smart building, right? That has changed. Specifically for us, a smart building, a smart campus is everything that encompasses the operations of that site. So everything from the HVAC control systems, but to these smart elevators, smart lighting, metering, access control. So all those pieces together become a smart campus, not just the idea that you're able to manage your heating and cooling from a smart location before. It's really involved into every component that feeds and operates the building. As I was saying, now that the pieces have also grown, right? So it went from HVAC to camera systems and access controls, smart elevators, lighting. But what we're also seeing now is the addition of smart kiosk, occupancy reporting, sensory and command centers. So the idea that everything that now operates the site, no matter how small that piece might be, no matter how small that piece of equipment might be, if it's providing data and it's requiring a network infrastructure, then we consider that as part of our smart building solution. So as part of our campuses, we have created an integrated building network to help run all those sites and all those pieces. So the strategy that we've taken up is creating a separate converged network for the building specifically. This converged network helps us operate and maintain all the pieces of the infrastructure, helps us dictate how the policy is provided for the different devices. Also, where is the data going? how are we accessing the information? How are we also providing maintenance? So what you see currently on the screen is basically two different designs for buildings that we've created over the years, where we're actively involved in all the diagramming, all the switch deployments, all the subnet schemas, everything that basically is going to be deployed for a building, from construction all the way to its being sustained, is maintained, designed, and implemented by us. So we will work with our partners, our GCs, our implementers, our vendors, to figure out a strategy that fits for a specific building or for a specific campus, and then help architect that all the way from the beginning. In this case, what you're seeing is the piece on my left, on the left of the screen, is basically a campus pertaining to about four different buildings. It's all interconnected through fiber and through copper. And then at each one of those locations, we have individual equipment helping run either camera systems, access controls, HVAC, lighting, anything that maybe our tenant will also like to be see in the infrastructure, but they might not have the networking for. We help guide them as well. So if they have any requirements, but they might not have as robust of a solution as we do, we help them with that deployment. On the other side, we have a building who is composed of four different sectors, and it was 700,000 square feet. So we ended up designing the infrastructure for them to be able to operate, maintain, and proceed with the operation of the site, while integrating all these different components, right? Using standards for our Palo Altos, using standards for our switches with Cisco, interconnectivity, our different vendors like Iodium in this case, the Allertons, the Tritiums, the Mitsubishis, everybody who comes into a building that operates within our sites has to go through this infrastructure, and this is completely separate from our corporate network. The objectives of this was to be able to provide a cybersecurity core and infrastructure for all the building systems. So even as we're looking at guest amenities, guest services, how are we providing guest Wi-Fi for our campus, we help determine and plan that with our vendors, making sure that all the infrastructure that's placed into the site is able to communicate across as expected, not just by our internal teams, but also by our tenants, right? We're in the business of leasing properties. We're in the business of leasing space. So we want to make sure that people are comfortable and happy when they come into the site and they have the amenities that they would probably have at home, right? If you go home, you have your Wi-Fi there, you have your connectivity available, pieces readily accessible to you. We want to create that same feeling within our buildings, while also keeping the quality of maintenance and support that we're providing to our tenants. It also helps us develop a building policy procedure, right? In the past, many buildings had their own operations. They were doing their own thing. Now we actually have policies and procedures for how a device should connect. How are we onboarding a new piece of equipment for the site? How are we then maintaining that piece of equipment? Who's maintaining that, right? Historically, you would see vendors using TeamViewer, LogMeIn, Rescue. We've gotten away from that. We're using specific solution with our vendor provider to make sure that only authorized users are entering into the system. So the whole idea of you know, the PAM and having sure that, you know, preferred access management is in place, or that protected solutions are provided for our vendors, it's the ideal that we're going forward with. And then it also helps us for the converge operation and facet integrations of different systems. If you have the infrastructure in place, if you have the networking in place, it then allows you to bring in different solutions and different systems for you to be able to accessibly and easily deploy that onto the site. But the one of the biggest things that we found out was a lot of these buildings were not really protected. So bringing that infrastructure, bringing in the Palo Altos, bringing in your firewalls, bringing in managed switches helps us create that additional envelope of cybersecurity around the building, because all these solutions are smart, right? All these solutions are accessible. And for the most part, they always want it to be on the internet. You want to be able to get to them from wherever you are in the world. So making sure that we put a policy and procedure around that structure has also helped us secure sites versus potential hacking and incidents that might occur. As you guys have seen in the past, you know, there's been all these famous pipeline hackings and water districts that are having issues. So we're trying to make sure that we can avoid being on those lists. And then that final infrastructure piece leads us to the ideal that we also need to protect our individuals, right? When you create a policy and infrastructure where you have something tangible, you can then go out and tell your engineers or your staff to change the way that they're doing their policies, deploy different security tools to the network, be able to augment the pieces that you already have on site because you have that infrastructure that has been built specifically for that building. And you know that devices that have this specific IP addresses should exist within this site, but maybe this other device that was never authorized, that has never gone through the vetting process, that is not connected to your site, might be a threat. So it helps us make sure that we're not only looking at the infrastructure in place, but also the people who are operating these individual solutions. Many times you will see that there are robust cybersecurity policies in place or cybersecurity tools in place, but the hack might come from somebody internally who may have not wanted to expose their password, who maybe forgot that they had written their password on the napkin on their desk. So making sure that those pieces are changing allows you to be able to go forward and really create a smart campus. So for us, that entire strategy has led us to the deployment, implementation, and infrastructure sites for all of our new construction. So everything that we're now doing has a standard where we work with our development team, work with our GCs, work with our subcontractors, all of our vendors to make sure that we are providing a solution in the space that is relevant for everybody and safe and healthy and going forward, hopefully provides the solutions that our tenants are looking for. And that's pretty much it. That's pretty much the killer strategy right there.
Great, thanks. That it sounds like you've got a great organization and really well thought out processes and plans for how you're implementing that. You know, looking at the converged systems versus, you know, the more siloed systems approach, a lot of times we kind of look to the construction methods and say, well, siloed systems are really perpetuated by, you know, the normal things flowing through electrical or mechanical or technology. But it's also a lot of times led by the organization. You know, we have siloed right. operational structures. And so, you know, like you take security, for example, a lot of times there's a security part of the organization that says, well, I want these systems. I want to manage it this way. And then that leads to those ongoing siloed operations. So how did you structure your organization to really be able to leverage the operational technology? I'm assuming with your title being operational technology manager that you really figured out how to have that group serve the other groups.
Yeah, so the initial thing was having everybody be a stakeholder in the technology, right? Because when something happens, it's always a lot of this, right? It was their fault. No, it's their fault. It's security solution, but it's assigned to IT solution. So we made everybody realize that we're all playing on the same team. We're all playing on the same level. And we can also use our budgets across the solution, right? So what we did is we created an internal hub, an internal organization that included our head of security, our head of engineering, representatives from the construction team, and said, what are you guys looking for? And how can we help you with that, your work, right? Many times the construction team told us, look, we give the designs to a third party vendor and they might design it for us and we'll just, you know, oversee it. They're really good at building a building, but they might not know the infrastructure and technology behind it. So what we said, we will take that piece from you. We will help you review it. We will give you guidance. And then you guys can still control the whole budget. You guys can control the whole project, but we will be that additional set of eyes. Because then now we also know that security is looking to do something because they're talking to us. We can then augment that together so that there isn't duplication of jobs. So now security talks to engineering, talks to construction, and we're all working together. So I will sit on the mechanical design meetings. I will sit on our construction calls. They will send me all the request proposals. They will send me, this is what we're looking to put in terms of access control. We'll say, well, look, we have a standard. This is a standard. Does it meet that standard? Yes, it does. Is it outside? Well, let's work with your vendor to retrofit, make sure we're requesting the correct readers, make sure we're requesting the correct controllers. So we're actually involved in the decision making and helping them make sure that they have a backup and a friend that is understanding some of the pieces that they might not get. Our teams are very smart, but sometimes, you know, the vendors may try to get a fast one on them, or just the project has to be done in 6 weeks and they might not be able to get a server for 12 weeks. So we'll need to go back and say, look, because of security, if we wait that extra 6 weeks down the road in a year when this server needs to get replaced again, you would have saved all that time. And it's probably cheaper to go with a newer device than having to replace equipment in a year and a half or 2 years that may or may not be a responsibility at that point, but somebody else will be dealing with it. So we created a committee of individuals who partner in there. We do quarterly updates for everybody is how are we working together? What solutions are we deploying? And then we work in conjunction with all of our teams to make sure that they are putting their input into the final design and implementation of a solution.
So how do you go about building new use cases and working with the different business units to continue to push the opportunity for new use cases?
So we actually, we took something from our sustainability team. Our sustainability team is amazing. They have an innovation lab on their side. What we did is we're doing a CRE tech innovation lab within us, right? So if there are certain departments that want to pilot a solution, if there are certain teams who want to see some sort of system, what we will do is we will pay for that from our IT budget and say, look, okay, you might not have a budget for running that new access control system that you really want to see. If you give us a space and you give us a tenant that are willing to work with that, we will pay for that part of that solution. If you're an early adopter of a sensoring solution, of a metering solution, we will pay for the first year. And then we're able to take that data and that use case and disseminate that through our portfolio and say, look, user A in this building took 100 meters or 100 sensors, ran it for a year. We got that data out there. We believe it's really beneficial. They're going to keep going with it because it's now part of their budget and their building solution. Are you guys interested as well? So we'll partner with our different teams and say, are you willing to look at this tenant or the system? And then we will pay for pieces of it and then work with them. We will also go to the different conferences. So we're going to ISC West next week. We're going to be looking at camera systems and access control systems and security pieces. I'm going to be looking at bollards, pieces that are not technically technology, but they will inhabit the building. They're going to be part of the ecosystem. So we're working together to make sure that anything that they might want to see, that a vendor will say, it's really easy to deploy this 4K camera, 100 4K cameras across your building. You won't have any issues. Well, we know that we will need, switches that are capable of carrying that traffic. We know that we will need fiber to be able to connect that, location that is over 300 feet away from the main hub. We know that we will also need the data links behind it to be able to then shoot that video to our cloud solution so that we can then see that as part of our regional security office. So we will work with them to see what their dreams are and not necessarily crush them, but help them realize what they want to do. And if it's an easy solution for us and a good win, then we will work with them and make sure that it gets implemented.
Yeah, that's great. That really helps you to be a technology resource for those other groups.
Exactly.
And not just, how to connect it.
Yeah, and then we see projects across, right? Well, we will see a vendor who did it in a different building, same project, maybe it's a different vendor or same vendor, but charging us two different prices. And we can say, well, look, we have a portfolio-wide rollout. Let's leverage our size to be able to use the economies of scale and be able to get costs across the board to be the same. Or say, well, look, TKE did it for this much. You guys have the same Otis. Why is it double or triple the cost? But
yeah, that's great. How are the tenants reacting to your smart building approach?
So we have tenants who are using the infrastructure for their systems. They might have ideas and solutions that they want to implement, but they don't have the infrastructure in place for it. So they will come to us and we will work with them to be able to deploy some of the systems that they're looking to work with. Even with our new construction, we will work with tenants to figure out what their long-term TI goals are, tenant improvements, tenant solutions, and see how does that fit into our infrastructure. Many times we can have them right on our same network because they're virtually separated, so we can separate them out of our network. They'll have to meet some cybersecurity complexities. Their vendors will have to go through our policies. They will have to agree to our terms, but then we allow them to forego spending 60, 70, 80K on deploying a system that we might be able to deploy on a much smaller scale, more fastly and cheaper for them. So we're having tenants who are requesting that using our infrastructure, and then we will give them access to that. A lot of them are also trying to pull analytics from the building, right? As their ESG strategy is growing, they want to see how the buildings are operating that they're occupying. They might not be the owner, but they are occupying that space. So they want to see how that's fitting into their overall goals. So we'll be able to give them the analytics of what's happening there. How is the building operating and how is their specific space comparing to the rest of the building? So,
all right. Well, thanks, Byron. Sure. We're going to move on to our next panelist, but that's very good insight and information. So I appreciate
it. No problem. Thank you, Donnie. Have a good one.
Thank you. All right. Next up, we have Mike Banks. He is the VP of Real Estate and Facilities for Oracle. As Vice President of Real Estate and Facilities of Oracle, he's responsible for design, construction, and operations of Oracle's 6.5 million square feet of real estate in their portfolio. And he has more than 25 years experience working on for technology companies, including Adobe and Juniper, and has served as the Director of Global Real Estate. So Mike, thank you. Yeah, you're on mute. You're on mute, Mike.
You're still on mute. Try to unmute once again. There you go.
I'm good now. Thank you. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. This is a topic I really get passionate about. And so Donnie gave you my outline. I'm speaking to you as an end user, so I'll have a little different perspective from this, but Oracle has 20 million square feet around the world, give or take. I'm going to talk a little bit about what we do in the Bay Area, but I'll also talk a little bit about what we're doing outside of the Bay Area. I'm coming to you from Campbell, California, which is in the Bay Area. And I was thinking as we were going through this presentation that we all are living in smart homes now. If you've got a Ring doorbell and you probably have a mesh network at home and you have cameras and you probably don't have, you've cut the cord on cable. So we're all living this smart environment now. And so I saw this coming, I think, several years ago when I was at Adobe, we started to implement it, and I've always had a passion around this. So what is IoT? To me, it's about efficiency and comfort. I've got to advance my slides here, sorry. Okay. It's about efficiency. It's about comfort. It's about value. I give Byron and Kilroy credit for what they're doing to make the tenant experience better. A lot of times when we go into lease space, it's a challenge to implement IoT solutions. Kilroy doing what they have done, providing that background for everybody, really makes it a lot easier. And he didn't say it, but I would imagine that he has a more desirable building because it's being run much more efficient, which keeps his operating costs down, which makes it more appealing to his tenants. So again, this is a wonderful thing. The reason I think that I am so passionate about this, it comes from an old mentor of mine. Many of you may know George Denise. George and I worked together for about 15 years, and George's mantra is you can't manage what you can't measure. And that's where kind of the genesis of IoT has been. And I've kind of taken that and we've gone forward with it. So what is it? It kind of varies by company and what you're trying to do. You can see on the slide there, those are the various things that companies think about when they're implementing IoT strategy, operational strategies. If I am talking to you and you haven't done this before, my guidance to you is start easy, start simple. Most of your buildings are going to have BMS controls. You can build on that. Lighting controls we found was one of the easiest things to implement. And you'll see a little later on why that's something that actually gives you some payback. There's easy things that you'll gain by starting to implement IoT. You will be able to measure more through utility metering. You'll be able to control run times, which to me is the easiest thing you can do to control your cost, is to control your run times. And you'll start to see what your payback is. The challenges for implementing IoT, you'll hear this from me, you'll hear us from others on the call. Part of it is that network security. Byron talked about it a little bit about how they've addressed it. We have that same challenge. We have multiple constituents that are worried about network security, and rightly so. When you're a company like Oracle that has significant amount of customer data that you're managing all the time, making sure that's secure is very important to us. One of the things that we've learned most about implementing IoT is that you have to have people within your organization that understand IoT, understand data. You are going to collect a significant amount of data from an IoT implementation. And one of the things that we find most challenging, and I think my peers on this call will speak to it as well, is having people that can use that data for good. And it's not just something in an Excel spreadsheet. I've got a very senior engineer that works in our buildings in Redwood Shores, and he helps instruct our younger engineers on how to run buildings. And so one of the first thing he'll do with the team when he's in a class is he'll show them various data fields from an IBIS screen. Thank you, Jason. And he will tell them that if you can't find five things wrong with your building by looking at your data screens, then you don't deserve to have it. You don't know what you're doing. And I think that's true anywhere. So finding those right people, those data analytic folks, those data scientists for sure, is really what's going to make you effective and get the return you need from some of your IoT implementations. I'm going to talk real quick about a couple of case studies here. This is a building that we own in Pleasance in California. It's two buildings actually. And this building started out as a classic office building built in the late 80s, early 90s. When Oracle took it over, I was given a challenge. Make this building electrical grid neutral. So we have installed significant solar panels on the roof of the buildings, which you can see, and we've also installed fuel cells. So a good portion of the year, that building is net independent from the electrical grid, which is a very significant contribution accomplishment that we're really proud of. Based on that, we started implementing more parts of IoT strategy. Having IoT allowed us to Energy Star benchmarking. And another thing that we worked on right after the implementation of all the electrical work is LED upgrades to the LED lights. I'm going to talk about that next because the implementation of LED lights and smart lighting is, to me, was a real turning point for us in how we implemented IoT. Another place that we were able to implement an IoT strategy was a new building we built in Guadalajara, Mexico, that opened late last year. This was a one-of-a-kind kind of first implementation of IoT in a building in Mexico. And it did not come without its challenges. It was a relatively new concept in Mexico. And we had a language barrier between the engineers that were designing the space and a lot of the IoT experts that were based in the US. Fortunately, we had someone on our team, Francisco Ruiz, who many of you may know, who speaks to this panel on a regular basis, who is bilingual and helped us put this in place. So we were able to put this in place, and it's operating amazingly well. It's one of the best buildings that we have, and it's one of the best buildings, I think, in at least in Guadalajara, maybe in much of Mexico. All of the things you see on the right-hand side, those are some of the things that we were able to implement, and it's now part of our suite of buildings that you will see a little later around the world that we are able to look at in real time from anywhere. All right, this is the slide I wanted you to see where the rubber really starts to meet the road. Now, the slide is not going to help you an awful lot because there is a bit of an eye chart associated with it. So I'm going to explain to you what this is. All the data in this slide comes from our smart lighting control system. All of our lights have sensors in them. All that sensor data is collected. So what you see on the graph, along the bottom are the various room numbers on this floor. This is one of our floors in our Redwood City campus. So along the bottom are the list of all the rooms on that floor. On the y-axis, what you have is the percentage of time that those spaces are occupied. So for the first time, we know when space is being used and how often. The box that is shown on the graph indicates just a range of when people are using the space. It's a 50 to 80% of the time these spaces are being occupied. And we feel like if spaces are being used 50 to 80% of the time, that's the right space. We've done something right. That's where people want to be. We want to build more of those spaces. On the other hand, you see some of those things that are outside below that range. Those are spaces that maybe we didn't get right. But at least we know when we can go back and figure out what we didn't get right. The best example I can give of that is we had two conference rooms, or we call, they were actually huddle rooms, small phone rooms, that were not being used. Now these rooms were being used everywhere else across the campus. People love these rooms, but these two were not being used. What we found out is these rooms were located right across from the manager's office, who could look directly in there and see what was going on. And people were afraid of going into those offices because they were afraid their boss was thinking they were slacking off. So those little pieces of information we were able to get because of our lighting control system and the data we were getting. This is another example, kind of the same thing. And again, this is another eye chart, but I thought it was important just to see that this isn't something just a one-off. We're doing this in a lot of places, and it really is helping us with a data-driven design concept for all of our spaces throughout the world. We have a long way to go. There's a lot of people that have opinions about this. It's not simple, especially when you have a company as large as Oracle is, but the commitment is there. We started out, we hired Francisco Ruiz, and now we've got people everywhere that are doing this. The last slide, this is it. This kind of shows you the different campuses and how we are looking at this from around the world, more than just one campus. So happy to talk about this forever, but my time is up. So Donnie, I'll turn it back to you.
Hey, yeah, I got a couple of quick questions for you. So it's really interesting with the space utilization metrics that you have. How is that shared with the business units, especially thinking about coming back from COVID and, you know, as organizations are going to more of a hybrid workforce? And so is that shared from a perspective of, you know, do you have more space assigned than you need, or will it be used for other metrics? Like, are we getting people back into the office the way we want to?
Honestly, we haven't come back into the office, so we don't know, but we do know now that we will have these tools to use. We have used these things in the past prior to the pandemic to point these exact traits out that I outlined earlier to let the lines of business understand. And they're very appreciative to get it, but we have to be very careful about how this information is shared. As you will find out, because of privacy issues, you have to be very careful about who sees information about somebody's individual office, if they're there or not. Our HR people are very concerned about allowing that information to be essentially in the public realm, just even if it's within Oracle. So the access to that information is highly restricted just to a select number of people within the RENF organization. And anything we report to the lines of business is within a range, not necessarily a specific number for a space.
So I had an audience question about how you're tracking that utilization. And so do you have integrated sensors in your light fixtures, or is it from, you know, a single sensor for the space?
No, they're all integrated in the light fixture. Each of the light fixtures have sensors in them that controls when lights need to go off and on. And it's an easy task to simply collect that on and off data and then analyze it later. The IBIS platform has allowed us to visualize it in a very digestible way.
Great. It was interesting that you brought up someone on your team being bilingual, because we often say that the operational technology group has to be bilingual. You've got to be able to speak IT and you've got to be able to speak facilities. So where does the OT and IoT team for your organization report? Is that a part of IT, or is it a part of facilities, or is it its own entity?
It's part of real estate and facilities, and we've actually recently changed it. We had it a very distributed model where our various regions had IoT specialists embedded in them. And then we realized that a better way to work on, to leverage that knowledge was to bring it all together. So we have a separate group within the real estate facilities organization, which is essentially our technology specialist group. And then they can act and implement best practices around the world. It's kind of a new model. We're just rolling it out, but I think it will work well. IT works very closely with us, especially up front when we're trying to get our security clearances. Every IoT deployment has to go through a very rigorous review process by our security team to make sure that we're maintaining network security, we're maintaining privacy concerns, and that not only is the internal network safe, but it's safe from the intrusion from the outside. And we do have a dedicated technology network in most of our buildings now.
Great. Well, we will get into this, I think, in a little more detail as a part of our group panel. For now, I will move on to introduce Jason. So thank you, Mike, and look forward to talking to you more.
Okay.
All right. Next up, we have Jason Whipple with IBIS. And Jason has 20 years experience with commercial real estate systems, engineering and managing integrated building solutions for global Fortune 500 companies. Jason has worked on designing and building multidiscipline integrated ecosystems and has a practical experience delivering enterprise level OT and IT converged frameworks. Jason? I think we're going to start with a video.
The environment where we work should be a place that makes our comfort, security, health, and productivity the highest priority without sacrificing sustainability and efficiency. Smart buildings make high-performance workplaces possible by connecting and controlling technologies so that all a building's systems can work together in concert. To create a smart building, a master systems integrator uses an elite resource pool of engineers, technicians, software programmers, project managers, and cybersecurity professionals. To succeed, a master systems integrator must be a collaboration partner and a process innovator. Only the best master systems integrators can respond and adapt at the speed of client requirements, customize the solution freely, and be agnostic to any and all hardware and software providers. Whether it's a single building, an enterprise campus, or a smart city, IBIS has the knowledge and expertise to create the smartest buildings. IBIS has integrated over 33 million square feet of global real estate, and for over 22 years, we have kept our clients loyal by exceeding their expectations and making buildings better to make lives better.
Well, thank you, Donnie. Let me start by saying thank you for the opportunity to present today. Our best practices are all based on real smart campuses that have been deployed successfully for quite a few years. We also selected areas that we feel are frequently overlooked or not given enough focus. So our first best practice, we have selected centralization. The enterprise universal user interface is often called the single pane of glass, but it really should be more than just like one screen to rule them all. It should unify operational tasks and move between operational systems so seamlessly that from an operator's perception, everything just appears as one cohesive system. Also, an enterprise UUI should be aligned to the company objectives so that the design drives operators to prioritize properly rather than just putting data on the screen because it's available. Centralizing data is a strong focus for many of our clients, and we couldn't agree more on the potential benefits this move offers. It can be difficult for some solution providers to migrate their database outside of the native environment, but we have found having our own database engineers that work closely with our integrators and project managers made the process very successful. our accounts without a client central client managed database or data lake at least prefer an on-premise installation to support higher security and create less risk. Data accessibility for this bullet point refers to making operational data available in a centrally controlled, secure fashion, and is one of the key advantages to data centralization. It is important to make sure that the solution can be customized and configured to meet the client-specific data processing qualifications. We have found that having a solution that is essentially hard-coded for one ontology or another doesn't provide the flexibility to work within client requirements. Whoop, went way fast there. Hold on a second. There we go. All right, our second best practice is any data, anytime, any place. So visualizations can either be the bottleneck or the gateway to success for smart buildings. Preferably, data sourced from any system can be represented in any format so that the design can be specifically focused to an individual client's needs versus a copy and paste from the last job sort of mentality that leads to disappointing results. We have engineered our operations for this sort of tailored approach so that we can be highly efficient with customizations and create increased client satisfaction. I think many people have heard the IT/OT convergence term relatively recently, but it has been a destination for our industry for a very long time. Having internal expert IT resources and IT knowledge as a foundation to the business has been a deciding factor to our success. IT/OT convergence should be woven into every smart building strategy. In addition to better security and pervasiveness, it also incorporates an infrastructure for support management and lifecycle support. So saying no system left behind doesn't necessarily mean every system. Making sure that there's a carefully crafted strategy prioritized to capturing the highest value first, like the 300 and the 330-300 rule, assures that you are not integrating data just because you can. That said, just because a provider is able to integrate a system doesn't mean that they can do it properly. So it's important to find qualified providers that can have background and expertise in the systems they are integrating. Let me get that slide moving here. Come on. There we go. It's always one step ahead of me. Or two. There we go. Our last best practice is data metering, or as Mike kind of stole my thunder on this quote, and we're also friends with George and Denise. If you can't measure it, you can't improve it or manage it. So the metering topic is very similar to the previous, but more granular in nature. Metering is costly, so it's vital that a business objective first strategy can be created before designing metering projects. This sort of planning is also critical because going back to the same location to add more metering can result in extended schedules and operational interruptions, not to mention added costs. Metering can be difficult to establish ROIs for because it only involves the ingestion of data and no inherent action, so it should be part of a larger plan that has its own established ROI. Metering design is often done after infrastructure is in place, or at least finalized. So we have found that this can create a massive metering obstacles, and that even small changes in the infrastructure design phase, in the infrastructure design phase, can lead to large savings in metering later down the road. The earlier a technology partner can be involved, the better. But even on existing buildings, making sure that a smart metering design is a factor in a TI or retrofit can save time and money. This doesn't just apply to energy either. This practice should be applied to any sort of edge data capture, like air, water, environment, waste, occupancy, all that stuff. So we have also found that while technology is progressing rapidly in our industry and that AI can do some phenomenal things, it is still necessary to pair these tools with experienced people to deliver that greatest value. Analyzation technology allows us to scale the expertise of a knowledge and skill set that is getting increasingly harder to find. So making sure that analysis services don't merely consist of automated reports is critical moving forward. See if I'll get my last slide. There you go. So that wraps up the IBIS best practice presentation, and I appreciate the opportunity once again to present our perspective on this topic. Donnie, back to you.
All right. Thanks, Jason. Just a couple of quick questions there. So I heard you say that you don't want to collect data just because you can, and I thoroughly agree with that. But at the same time, sometimes you come up with a new use case and you say, well, I don't know if I have that data captured. So how do you balance that and help your customers walk through what data should we collect? You may not use it today, but I can think of reasons that you should.
You know, absolutely. I think it's all about having that strategic plan, giving as much forethought as possible, as early as possible. And to go back to Mike's presentation, the People, Planet, Profit is a really good place to start. We find that a lot of organizations, at least from within the smart buildings group or the operational group, don't necessarily have, they may have the corporate objectives like people, planet, profit, but they don't necessarily know how that correlates to the technology in a smart building. So getting a partner in place that makes those connections between kind of, I won't say lofty, but the kind of the 40,000 foot view corporate objectives and how that relates to how that can be implemented in real time. Having those technology partners who are always kind of, their job is to look into the future, to see those use cases that our clients may not necessarily see today and plan ahead. And of course, there's contingencies in place. IT/OT convergence is a big one. You know, getting that network infrastructure in place makes it simpler to add systems later on because those procedures and policies are in place to be able to do that.
And so on a similar note, as you help come up with new use cases, how do you turn that into visualization and new user experiences?
I hate to sound like a broken record, but it really comes down to those business objectives and designing it around the purpose of that use case, right? So it's easy to take something like occupancy tracking and just put it on a screen and say, hey, here's what the rooms are doing, right? But as Mike displayed, putting it together in a screen that allows you to pull that purpose out of that as easily as possible. Relativization with other graphics. You know, if you just throw a number on a screen, what does that number mean? You have to have some sort of other number there to reference it, whether it be in the past or with a different building or with some sort of standard. So going purpose first design is really the answer to that, to create those use case actualizations.
Great. All right. Well, thanks, Jason. I know we'll get into some more questions in our panel. So thanks for being with us.
Sounds good.
All right. And next up, we have Natalie Patton. Natalie is Building IoT's Director of Customer Success, leading the team responsible for all software implementations and ongoing support. She has nearly 10 years in the building automation and controls industry. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Donnie. Thanks for having us on today. I'm excited to talk about Buildings IoT and one of the big projects we've been working on lately. I'll start with just a brief introduction. Buildings IoT is a multifaceted organization with roots in building controls and automation. We have dedicated teams who specialize in various aspects of smart buildings. Our four key areas of focus are designing and installing control systems, consulting on and implementing integration projects as an MSI, developing and deploying single pane of glass command and control plus analytics software for a unified management front end, and providing data-driven maintenance services for all building types. Recently, we've seen an uptick in interest around creating smart buildings and keeping them smart over time. This slide just shows some of our ongoing enterprise relationships and some of the newer projects that we've got underway. But for today, we thought it would be interesting to dive into one project specifically. The 800 Fulton Building in Chicago is a new 18-story 500,000 square foot Class A office building in Chicago's West Loop. And like any good smart building, 800 Fulton started with some lofty goals. On the aesthetic side, the owners wanted to create a visually stunning and architecturally interesting building that was in line with the artistic soul of Fulton, of Chicago's Fulton Market neighborhood. They also wanted to fill it with a connected infrastructure that would deliver superior spaces for tenants and their guests. And at Fulton, this included everything from open protocol control systems to integrated elevators and advanced IoT sensors for things as diverse as bathroom supplies and indoor environmental quality. So Buildings IoT was brought in and as an MSI and the operational platform through it at the design phase when it was just completing and the construction phase was just getting underway. And the timing of this is important because in a smart building, one small decision made early on can impact the extent to which you're able to achieve those smart building goals or risk extensive change orders from multiple subcontractors, as other people have mentioned here today. Having an MSI on board as early as possible adds integration consideration to every system conversation and serves as that check against what's being submitted and what is actually required to achieve the ultimate vision. This is also when the project use cases are honed, some of those more strategic objectives that other people have talked about. So for example, there may have been idealized states put forth as the smart building was initially conceived, like integrate to the waste management system, but is there really value in adding sensors to trash cans and bringing that data in through your BMS? And these are the questions that the MSI asks during that beginning phase when all of the elements of the building are really starting to come together and people are really starting to look critically at how they're going to achieve the smart building. At Fulton, there are a lot of different teams responsible for a lot of different pieces of the smart building, and it has been our job as the MSI to make sure that all of those teams are providing the details necessary to get the systems connected and communicating data. As the platform provider, it's also our job to complete the integration and present the data in a unified front end that is easy to navigate and usable by multiple audiences, right? That's the ultimate, the goal of the smart building, like bring the data in and make sure you can do something with it. So some of the challenges that we've encountered at 800 Fulton are likely the challenges that we think every smart building is experiencing today, because the reality is a lot of IoT technologies are still very new. And if you're building a smart building today, you're likely one of the first to deploy the technologies that you've selected. That doesn't mean they're bad or unreliable. It just means that the industry as a whole is evolving rapidly. So things may take longer because they're less developed, or a newer, cheaper option may become available by the time your building actually reaches occupancy. This is where future-proofing your infrastructure and making it easy to add or remove technologies without having to undergo major redesigns goes a very long way. So it's nice to have the time built in at the upfront to make sure that you can flex as your options change. Other challenges around the newness of smart buildings, and we've certainly experienced this with Fulton, is that the construction process for a smart building is a bit different. It takes a lot of coordination and digging through the weeds in order for all the necessary pieces to actually come together. And that's not typically how the construction process works. For example, at 800 Fulton, there are a lot of extra layers and teams involved in the checkout process. Ultimately, every system goes through the same process where we're interrogating, is the system connected? Is the equipment communicating? Is the data flowing? Is it the right data? Is it arriving at the right time? And if the answer is ever no to any of those questions, there's a lot of troubleshooting that has to happen. So things can take a bit longer, and there's just a lot of continued coordination across multiple teams who are involved in each little piece. But ultimately, if we've learned anything from the Fulton project, it's that the smart building journey is definitely a long one, but the ability to see things within building systems that really have never been seen before is well worth it if you can get through all the details and make it to the end when you've actually got an integrated platform and all of your devices communicating, and you can really analyze the data across all of the systems. So it takes a while, but once you get there, it's well worth it. That rounds out the case study.
All right, thanks, Natalie. You brought up some really good points. And you know, the one point that you had about the measuring the waste made me think of a question that there's a lot of interesting use cases that we can come up with, and we can think about how that can drive value, but there's a cost associated with it. So how do you help the building owners to prioritize the use cases so that you can make sure you're delivering what's going to be mission critical, and then maybe putting other things on the back burner that may be not cost justified?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we find that a lot of projects start with this big wish list of use cases, and then when we or any MSI come on board, it's really a process of starting to really evaluate what some of those costs are. And it's not even just first cost of what it takes to procure and install the sensors, but it's what it takes to integrate it, what it takes to create the UI and the analytics around that, and then the ongoing maintenance of those sensors. Are there costs associated with access to the API? Are there costs associated with recalibrating or installing new sensors when they fail because, oh, it turns out that those sensors only last for a few months? So it's really digging into the proposed solution provider and meeting with them, talking with them, understanding their business model, and really trying to understand how it lines up with the developer or the building owner's plans, and then really asking who is going to use this data. And once you start asking those questions, then the conversations tend to turn around.
And deploying these use cases really requires a lot of inter-vendor coordination with all the different parties that have connected systems. And so are you seeing more willingness in the collaboration between different vendors, or is that now that it's becoming more commonplace to have an MSI on the project, is that an easier process?
I think everyone is more than happy to work together. It's just that they don't necessarily understand the full extent of what will be required. So we've never run into any like animosity with contractors of not them kind of saying like, what are you doing here? Get out of my way. But it's more of just like catch them before they leave the job and are too busy on something else and can't respond to our calls or emails anymore. So we've been lucky on the Fulton project where the general contractor is incredibly involved and has set up those weekly touch points with every single contractor, so we've been able to start building those relationships really early on and help people understand what the process is and at what point we'll be coming in asking them a lot of questions. So hopefully after the first one, people kind of have a better understanding of at least the time commitment that would be involved, so that nobody wants to end up on the end of the project out of money and still having to respond to requests or check connectivity and stuff. So we just try to front load it with an understanding of what's to come.
Yeah, getting those scopes defined early goes a long way.
Yeah.
Okay, well, great. Thank you. We will jump into some more conversation in the panel, and I'll get our next panelist introduced here. Thank you, Natalie. All right. Next up, we have Raj Subramanian, and Raj is the co-founder and CPO for Facilio. His career spans over 20 years of product and revenue operations, focusing on enterprise scale telecom and IoT solutions. Raj, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Donnie, and thanks to the RealCom team for the opportunity to present here in the session. Before I start, just a quick background about the company and the product and solution that we offer. Facilio is a technology vendor in the space. We offer smart building Smart Campus IoT and data platform for building operations, portfolio-wide building operations. We are an Axel and Tiger global backed company, tier one VCs backing us, headquartered out of New York, been in business for 4 years, and finding great traction globally across different continents, really. Let me try to move to the next slide here. Do I have controls here? All right. Okay, in this session, I'm mainly going to be presenting what is called an overlay approach to smart building projects in terms of how technologies like cloud and IoT can be leveraged for smart building projects. A few months back, I co-wrote a white paper along with James Dice of Nexus Labs, exploring this overlay at great length. You can find that white paper on our website. So this is I'll take a couple of slides to kind of present the idea of an overlay solution, and then present a couple of case studies in terms of how this is actually implemented using Festio's overlay product. On this slide, you can see, and a lot of you must be familiar with the silo problems in buildings, right? Every building traditionally come with a lot of these operational, automation systems and operational technology that is kind of siloed at the building level. So each has its own hardware, software, and in a lot of the earlier panelists talked about how they are bringing everything together into a converged network so that they become accessible. So this overlay overlay methodology is a way to kind of addressing the problem of silos. And there are, in effect, it's actually leveraging cloud and IoT to bringing together and the bridging the gap and making the data accessible from all of these buildings. And essentially, it has two components to it. That is, it's an edge and cloud component. Cloud component is where you have the overlay solution. And when I say cloud, it can be private or public cloud, right? So, but essentially, overlay fundamentally means it can be applied across the portfolio, even if you start with the building level or at a simple system level. But cloud is where the application, the end application resides, and that's where all the use cases that we're talking about here are realized. And the outcomes are delivered. And edge is sort of like the middleware mediation agent that helps bring data from the buildings to the cloud to enable those outcomes. There are different types of overlay, as you can imagine, and really depends if there is, nothing, better or worse between these things. It really depends on the business context and what outcomes you want to achieve. Like building overlay is typically an overlay that you system that you like a single pane of glass, like system that can be deployed at a building level or at a campus level in some cases. But that brings all of the systems in the building, like automation, energy, sensors, security, surveillance systems, into one solution, and helps deliver workflows across these silos at a building level. System overlay is something that you, rest of the things are more applied on a portfolio level, but a system overlay would be focused on a specific system. It could be my occupancy data. You build a system just for occupancy data or just for building automation, right? If traditionally, companies have built like a building automation overlay using a Niagara, or they'll deploy a Metasys across the portfolio. It's just focused on HVAC for the most part, but it works across buildings, right? So that is an example of an overlay system. Even if in our definition in the white paper, it does not a traditional Metasys won't qualify as an overlay. It has to adopt, it has to be based on IoT and data and cloud technologies, but that is a good application or how you would see an overlay system overlay solution. A functional overlay would will be for a functional outcome, a specific functional outcome. It could be your analytics, it could be fall diagnostics, or just indoor air quality based solution that you deploy across portfolio. And all of these overlays are tying together some data from buildings in, with some use cases that you want to deliver and some outcomes that you want to achieve at a portfolio level. Right? And data overlay is a concept that a lot of you know, large enterprises are kind of exploring. This is just a way to kind of bring all of the data together from across the portfolio and building like a data lake or a data warehouse, not focused on any particular system or a function or an outcome or a use case, right? So this is just a way to make the data accessible across your portfolio. And then any use case that you want to build is actually leveraging the data overlay or the data lake for all of their data needs. So this is a powerful way to architect a smart building strategy for your portfolio because, you know, longer run as you actually go from one use case to another, are going, you know, building, you know, or expanding a portfolio from, you know, smaller footprint to a larger footprint, you end up doing a lot of redundant system integration and things like that, you know, if you're not holistically thinking about it. And data overlay really helps tackle that problem. And finally, a hybrid overlay is what we call an approach or a solution that can, you know, kind of address all of these overlay types, right? So, because in any given organization, the current need might be to just start with a single function. You're currently just focused on indoor air quality, and you want to deploy for that. But while you are designing and deploying for that particular need, you need to be aware about all of your future needs and future use cases, and how you will go from current needs. And you know, pick a system that can kind of evolve or address your future needs, right? And it maybe in some other cases, if you're starting with one building and deploying a solution for one building, and then but later there might be a need to extend it to other buildings. So you might start one at one place. Your current needs might be a building overlay, or a system overlay, or a functional overlay. But how do you have a long-term perspective and pick a system that is kind of hybrid in nature or can help address some of these other future needs for other types of overlays? So that's in a nutshell what an overlay and the different types of overlay and the kind of problems an overlay solution helps address. I would like to present like a couple of use cases. This is a class A new construction, a Brookfield property, their first property in the Middle East, where, and this is something that we're seeing commonly being specified by consultants these days on new construction, class A properties of certain size, right? And this is like, again, the single pane of glass that earlier speakers talked about. We just kind of, this at a building level in this case, but it can easily be like a campus level solution. You are bringing together all of the underlying building systems, right? Security, surveillance, fire, elevators, network equipment, as well in some cases, and automation, metering, and sensors, and all of that data is integrated and flowing to the overall solution. And the last use case is the functional overlay use case, where this is like for a corporate office, typical tenant who's occupying a space, and they have this need, or most of the use actually like an IWMS workplace management, space management solution. But nowadays you have a need to kind of tie occupancy data and indoor air quality data to those type of applications, right? So this is like a functional overlay system that was deployed for one such customer who's doing space management and space utilization using the occupancy data that is collected from those buildings. Donnie, I think that's the end of it. I'm happy to take any questions.
Yeah, thanks, Raj. I saw your item about the data overlay, and we've seen interest in this model where people are interested in, you know, not necessarily a full-blown application, but they want to take all of their data to a common location so that they mm-hmm. are kind of, you know, desegregating that from the other applications and then use that as a middleware to get to another application. So when you're deploying in that model, are you applying data, you know, metadata tagging to the data so that it's basically more the unified and able to be used by other applications?
That's right. We take a platform approach to the whole thing. So it's very configurable, customizable based on a customer need. So we're not based on any given standard, but the solution can be customized to any of the customer preference for a tagging or ontology standard, right? There are multiple things evolving right now, but that's the approach we take. But essentially, yes, it could be a custom data model or you follow a certain standard, but you can make it work for any of those things.
You can build that into the model if there's a need.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, very interesting. Well, thank you. We're going to pull our panel together and we will have some Q&A for the entire group. We'll let everybody get brought on here. So while you're getting re-entered here, so the first question that I had was around analytics. And so we talked a lot about connected buildings and connected systems and strategies. And it gives us all of this data that's now available. There's certain purpose-built use cases that we are able to deploy, but there's also there's data in the data. And how do we find that? What do we do with it? So I'd like to just kind of to each one of you ask, what is your strategy around analytics, and how is this helping you to improve your business model?
All right,
Mike, we'll start with you.
I'll go first. Our strategy, similar to what I presented, is not just rely on the analytics itself, right? Because the meaning is not the data. The meaning is derived from the data with a background of expertise, right? To understand what that means. And certainly AI can create relationships and build a very complicated structure, but unless you understand some of the aspects that can't be brought into data, I think Mike's example of the manager sitting across the hallway is a perfect one. You know, analytics isn't going to grab that. That's someone going out there and doing some research and, you know, a little detective work, but you never would have known to ask those questions if the analytics wasn't there. So to me, it's very much a partnership. And then also, I think my one other comment would be back to the centralization aspect of my presentation is I think nowadays every IoT system has an analytics bolt on, right? So mm-hmm. just like silos for systems, now we're getting silos for analytics, where you need a silo package for this an analytics package for this and an analytics package for that. So right. Centralizing everything and then deciding on one central analytics package, I think has a lot of advantages.
So Byron, go ahead, Mike.
I'm hoping that people, as they deploy this, realize that they have to have a dedicated resource around analytics. And it's in a real estate facilities world or a building world, those people just, that's not where they go to. They're not attracted to that. So I think it's a bit of a challenge to find that. But I think if we identify that that's the need, getting the funding, will be the challenge. The challenge is always, what's the payback on these things? I'll give a really simple example. So we, to the trash, do you measure trash? Well, we actually do. We put a camera in our dumpsters, and they were designed they had in them artificial intelligence that could identify how much material was in the dumpster. These were compactors, actually. And if there was contamination in the dumpster stream, we pay a different rate for contaminated versus uncontaminated waste. So because of the AI that was in there, this project paid off in 2 months. So there's things out there. Now, this was an example, kind of to Jason's point, where AI did it, but I think there is more to it. There is people that need to figure out how to take the disparate pieces of data that we're going to get and draw a solution, a conclusion. So, you know, can you figure out a way to correlate badge access to the amount of toilet paper you order? There's those things are out there, but trying to get people to figure that out, it's not trivial.
Yeah, it's a good point that the ROI can be difficult to calculate, but one thing that's for sure is that if you don't look at the data, there is no ROI. So you can collect it all day long and do nothing with it. And so then the question becomes, how much are you willing to spend? And that's where I think some of those small wins start to generate that interest, that people go, oh, you were able to figure that out. That's really interesting. What else can you figure out?
Yeah. I tell this story all the time about the trash because it's the one that everybody can go, oh, I understand.
Yeah, for us, it's interesting because as Jason and Mike were saying, right, you have all these different streams of data. And historically, our sustainability team has been in charge of gathering that data, and it's a really manual process. But now we're automating a bunch of this information so that we can give them additional resources to pull the data more easily. We can give third-party vendors who are helping them with the data aggregation tools, systems that they can get into more easily, but also looking at how people are reoccupying spaces and how do we staff up our cleaning teams, right? With COVID, we know a lot of the cleaning staff were hit pretty bad, right? A lot of the buildings reduced their cleaning teams. So now as we know that, you know, spaces in the 16th, 17th, and 18th floor are being occupied, maybe the janitorial staff that was responsible for that can be brought back now, right? The same with the parking. Our parking teams, our valet parking teams, right, who were unfortunately let go or reduced in hours, because we know the analytics of reoccupancy, we can say, look, in 2 weeks, we're going to need 3 or 4 valet parkers back, or in 6 weeks, we're going to need the entire janitorial staff back in, because the analytics are allowing us to see that happening in real time. So it's crucial. People don't really think about it, right? As Mike was saying, you can order more toilet paper if you know that the restrooms on the third floor are being used more often and nothing on the fifth floor, or you can reduce. We know we have locations where, I kid you not, you can walk in and you have hand sanitizers everywhere, because we thought people were going to be coming back sooner, but you know, those expire or the towels dry out. So, you know, as we know where we can deploy those solutions, and the analytics are helping with those pieces.
Yeah, this whole, you know, return to work strategy is such a great opportunity for analytics, because, you know, when you talk about analytics in the past, you've got building operators that say, I know how to run a building. I've done this for this many years without this information. And have you ever ran an empty portfolio for 18 months before? No, this is the first time we've ever done that. And so what does that look like coming back, and how can you use this data to save money, or even retrospectively, why your buildings didn't save energy while they were empty?
Exactly. Yep. That's one of the things I was going to mention. The metrics came out, and really buildings were still operating because nobody was turning off lights or turning off different pieces, even though the site was empty. So if we had these sensors in the past, maybe they would have made more of a difference. But going forward, I think it's going to be, as we have that hybrid work from home, work from the office, I think those analytics are going to be more essential.
The analogy I heard was keeping the shower on just in case someone wants to take a shower.
Right. So another question that I had is around cybersecurity. You know, as we get more connected things and we talk about this more and educate really the entire industry more, the question always comes up, like, well, aren't you just introducing more risk with all of these connected systems? And how do you ensure that these systems are safe? And so how has cybersecurity, you know, maybe even changed some of the things that you're currently doing? Because our hackers are getting more sophisticated, but we're also getting more industry best practices with things like CMMC and, you know, other measures of saying, you know, we understand that these things have to be done, but can we, you know, do everything that we can to make them secure?
I think for us, that was the, and sorry, Mike, I saw you, that was the primary goal, right? That's what kicked off everything, because we saw the Target hacks, we saw all those pieces, and that was a brand reputation piece. So realistically, this whole smart building project came about, how do we secure our buildings from intrusion? And then that opened the whole can of worms, right? That opened, like, we thought it was just BMSs, and then it became lighting controls and elevators and water detection and this and that. And then how do we then wrap our hands across that and create a cybersecurity plan for the whole building, not just for one system, but entire? How do we make sure that our asset management teams understand that you're not just going to connect a device into the network without telling IT or telling OT or telling somebody and establishing that procedure? Because at the end of the day, we said, right, it's all this. It was your responsibility. No, it was your. Now we can say, look, it was this person's role within this structure, within this policy. If something happened, let's go back and now have a response for how does that happen? How do we then recover from a ransomware attack or from an intrusion and have a strategic plan, just like what we do with any other infrastructure issue, right? You have all these response plans for a fire, for emergencies. It should be the same thing on the cyber side for the building.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the things we're doing is all of our devices, our IoT devices, now we're putting into our asset log. So we know what we have, we know where they are. And then as various software and firmware patches have to be implemented, at least we know where that has to take place. It's not going to help the recovery, but it's a step in trying to manage your resources. When you start lighting control systems, you could have thousands of them in a building. So
even from a lifecycle management standpoint, having them connected, you at least know they exist. I mean, we've done, you know, smart building readiness assessments before, and you know, someone thinks they have X amount of assets, and then when you're done, like, wow, I didn't know I had all that.
There's all this stuff that happened that you guys are talking about inside of the building, and then there's also the cloud element. So for us, we have dedicated security teams focused on making sure that our cloud platform is secure. But then also when we're looking at all those IoT devices also come with their own clouds. So how are you connecting into those clouds? And are they providing a secure connection between your building and your integrated cloud platform? And sometimes those things are beyond your control. You can't tell that sensor company how to develop their cybersecurity processes, but at least having someone who can identify that may be against your own cybersecurity policies is really good, because it gets really nuanced and really in the weeds really quickly on a lot of these things, the more connected out that you get. So there's the network in the building side, and then there's the whole cloud atmosphere.
And that becomes selection criteria.
I was going to say, as an MSI, that's one of our roles, is to do that IoT system evaluation, because, you know, having just IT evaluate an IoT system, they're only looking at it from one aspect. They're not looking at it from the specific use case or adjacent use cases to other departments. And so sometimes an IoT system isn't just a one-trick pony. It feeds data into multiple different organizational silos. So having a technology champion for that system that can work with IT and like do that evaluation together cohesively is pretty critical.
Mm-hmm. I usually see this and often advise customers to, you know, when they're thinking about smart building use cases and strategies, start with the network, right? So network actually powers the data, which in turn powers the applications, right? So the fundamental thing is the systems on the network and how they are conversion. You know, once you get that right, it's easier to work on the layers, you know, above that, you know, in terms of data overlays, one such strategy, and finally powering those applications. You get a more organized, great tech stack on how to go about things.
All right. Well, the one of the last questions that I had was around digital twin. It's a term that we hear a lot in the industry, and you know, I think everyone understands where we want that to be, you know, few understand where it really is today. And so, you know, what's your idea and thought process around digital twin? And when I say that, I really mean, how are you getting from design BIM model to operations model?
Yeah, so maybe I can go first.
Sure.
So BIM itself is like a construction level software, right? It's never like envisioned for like an operation. Maybe that was the idea, but you know, it's not the practical use of it. And then there are these digital twin technologies or solutions that are not really IoT solutions, right? They focused on visualization and 3D visualization aspects of it and modeling aspects of it and simulation maybe. But powering all of that should be the real-time data. So a fully effective digital twin system is sort of a very advanced building automation system in certain aspects, right? So it's sort of your BIM plus building automation functionality put together becomes your digital twin system. But you know, practically, that you know, we've not seen some solution evolve like that, or maybe at some point, but it's not the case right now. So we have to. So that's where the digital twin technology is a little bit behind in terms of what the asks are from the customers or the stakeholders. That's where the gap is. That's my personal take on it.
One way to kind of also think about digital twin is in the development terminology of like a sandbox. So when you're rebuilding your website, you don't want to make changes to the live site in case something that you do breaks the page that 4,000 people are looking at every hour. So that digital twin technology makes it so that you can get from the place that you are with the information that you have to where you want to get without compromising your operations in the meantime. And even in the case of like new constructions, there's things that happen with just the passage of the information across of the systems and a lot of hands that need to be in that cookie jar. So if you have that middleware layer that can house all of the data while everybody plays with it before it gets presented on a front end, it's really helpful. It's not just like this kind of mirror image of everything that you have that you just put away and don't look at. We think of it more as just kind of the engine that fuels getting from point A to point B.
Yeah, absolutely. We want something that can give us those what if scenarios. Yeah, I want to know what happens to my building if I shut the chiller off at 4 p.m. I don't want to know that by doing it. I want to know that by modeling it.
Yeah, those models can be complex, right? And so I think to me, or to us, or I'll say me, the digital twins, it needs to go in with a little bit of caution, right? Because I've seen things advertised as digital twin where they're just bringing in the utility meter. And I said, right. Oh, we're modeling utility. Well, not. I mean, you can have that description for one point, but to me, I think a real digital twin brings in 3D geolocational or you know locational data in aspects to the IoT system. So it's got some geospatial aspects to it. And when you try to put that in an analytics fashion, especially the relationships of shutting down a chiller, for example, there's all sorts of complex things in a building, as we all know, that are very difficult to model for AI. So I think, yes, this is a platform to start off with, but I think the technology is early. And I think there's a lot more work that needs to be done. Again, it's not a single data point, and it's not going to look at every single relationship because as we know, buildings are incredibly complex. So I think I'm not saying it's not a bad place to go. It's where we want to go, but it needs to be entered into with caution.
Sure. Okay, so I got a question for the group. When building commissioning takes place, how can that be used to kind of parallel a digital twinning operation or concept? Anybody done that yet? I mean, that's the time when you have an opportunity to model a behavior. And has anybody done it yet?
There's a couple of things. You know, when you look at analytics and commissioning, you know, there's the ability to automate some of our commissioning activities that would, you know, give you automated results. But then there's also automated functional tests, which kind of can build some of that data that you're talking about. But as far as using that commissioning data to build a digital twin model that allows us to run, you know, some of those what if scenarios, haven't really, you know, seen that yet, but I do think it's like Jason said, it's where we want to get to. But I think that you know, because it is such a complicated solution, that it's really going to be different people solving different parts of it. And then if we all do our jobs correctly, the data is going to be easily accessible to tie those things together. So our BIM model to our asset management system to our real-time, you know, smart building platforms, all of that works together if we tie the data together correctly. But yeah, no one's built the the single platform that does all of that.
I'll jump in there, Mike, and basically say I think it's an opportunity to capture metadata that doesn't currently exist that would reference digital twins, right? So the data we capture about our sensors may not be enough to support a digital twin implementation on a retrofit. You know, height of sensors, exact location of sensors, all sorts of, you know, information about where this data is really coming from that we just have in our heads, or someone just knows. It's not actually in the database. And so I think there's an opportunity there, but again, you have to have your plan in place and know what metadata you're going to capture. So that's, you know, that's the rub.
All right, thank you. Sarah, you're going to close us out.
Yeah, thank you so much, Donnie, for moderating the panel, and thanks to all the panelists for sharing your insight with the community. Really appreciate it. I do want to invite the audience to join us for next week's webinar, where we will be talking about kind of the new tech expectations now that we are entering the post-pandemic phase. So we'll have another session next week, Thursday, same time. Hopefully you will be able to join us. And then I also want to invite you to join us for our conference. We'll be back in person this year. Very excited to be in the Western Kirtland in Scottsdale at the end of October, early November. And with that, I want to wish everyone a wonderful rest of your day. And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.